Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. My name is Kieran Tatham, and for the first time in a number of weeks, I am again accompanied by my good friend and deputy editor for Women's Soccer Zone, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
Kieran, I'm good. Good to be back. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has been a while. Obviously, we had the interview with Heyo in between this show and the last one, but it's you and I, buddy, and we have plenty to plough through. I don't like doing introductions anymore because you kind of just feel like you're rambling for no reason. So we're going to dive straight in on this occasion. And the first topic of conversation is the She Believes Cup. Now, in theory, mate, I should be bragging because England for the first time on United States soil, I think for the first time ever, and if it's not, it's certainly for the first time in a number of years, England managed to overcome the United States, but England weren't the only nation to overcome the United States because they also lost heavily to France in a 3-0 defeat and obviously drew their game with Germany. Not very often that you see the US go three games without a win, but I guess let's start with that because they were the home team. They are the hosts of the She Believes Cup. How do you summarize that one?
Well, I think it should be fair to preface, Kieran, that I'm not a US soccer apologist. I try to take things very even keeled. If I see something that I like, I'll say it. If I see something that I don't like, I will also say it, but at least try to make it in a factor that it's constructive to go forward. The US, of the four teams in this tournament, they had nothing to play for in the sense that they're not preparing for a major competition. It should be a year and a half until they go for World Cup qualifier. So you test things out, you mix things up, you try out different formations, and it backfired this week. Most specifically, the three back. I think for those who watched the France game, all you had to do was watch the first 20 minutes, and you see Eugenie Lissomer just dominate the left side, including taking on the outside back, center back, rounds goalkeeper on multiple occasions. One time scores, the other time draws penalty. So, yeah, I think these matches for the U.S. that you have the opportunity to make these changes and test things out. And I know a lot of people aren't going to be happy to say that, I'm not a big believer right now that Ali Long should be a lone center back. I think she needs a partner back there. I'm not a fan of the 3-4-3, but good teams like that will exploit it, and fair play to France and also England at times. They exploited it.
Yeah, I feel that I watched all of the games, much like yourself. In fact, the only game I did miss was that France game live. I saw the highlights back. I do feel that sometimes every nation does it. It's not just the United States, but everyone loves a scapegoat. And I do feel that maybe Ali Long has been that person, and I have to say that I'm not a fan of her at centre back. Anyone that speaks to me about Ali Long will know that I'm a huge fan of Ali, but I'm a huge fan of Ali as a centre midfielder. I always have been. I think she's one of the best in the league. I think she's earned her spot on that US roster. I'm not going to sit here and slate her as a centre back, but I don't understand why Jill Ellis is putting her in that position. She's essentially hanging her out to dry by putting her there. As you say, we saw Eugenie Lissomer dominate that opening 20 minutes, the ball over the top. And that can happen to the best defenders. Ali got caught out. It happens. We've seen world-class defenders get caught out of position. It happens. It's not uncommon. So I don't think it's fair necessarily to pull Ali up on that. But I think we know her best position is centre midfield. We see her thrive for the Portland Thorns in that position. And I think it's the formation in general, mate. I don't think it's personnel.
And I agree with that. This is me not saying that I'm not an Ali Long fan. So for folks who are thinking that, you can jump right off that wagon immediately. I'm with you. I think that she's a talented, possession-oriented player who is not afraid to get into a challenge. But in great center-back partnerships, you need almost that yin and yang where you have one that, before I go into it, you want both players to be confident with the ball at their feet. But then you'd love to see one center half be more skilled with the ball at their feet. And then you have that sort of bruiser of another center back who's not afraid to win balls in the air, be brave in those 50-50s inside the box. And, you know, if you perhaps maybe put, I don't know, like Ali Long with a Julie Johnston or somebody along those lines, the other kind of player maybe of the likes of a Rachel Buehler, I think that's where she'd have more success, because then she'd play as that center half who's a very technically skilled and sound player who can figure out difficult situations and succeed. But just leaving her as that lone center back and then having Becky Sauerbrunn almost as a right back, that kind of ruins things. And that left Casey Short, who she's no fault as well, that she got left out to dry in a number of different situations. And both, it was in the Germany game as well as the France game, where she just did not have a good day at the office. And that's unfortunate for her.
I have a question for you before we kind of discuss the other nations. Why is Emily Sonnet not getting more minutes on the pitch? If you want to play a free back, play some natural centre backs. You have Emily Sonnet. She won a championship. Well, she won the League Shield last year with the Portland Thorns. Why is Emily Sonnet not getting more minutes?
I mean, that's the great mystery, isn't it? There are multiple players that aren't getting a sniff of first team action. This is an opportunity that Jill Ellis had to play every player that she had on the roster, and I think there were players that did not see the field outside of goalkeepers. Then what's the point of bringing these players in? I'm sorry, because this is not a two-game series where you want to make sure that everybody gets minutes against a lower opponent for the U.S. These are three quality matches where, in the end game, there's nothing going forward, so why are you holding everything on the bench? You play all the players. There should be other players that have been bypassed that would fit perfectly into the system. You know, years past, Lauren Barnes got selected into the national team roster, and I don't think she ever saw the field. You can name maybe 10 other players that would have that similar situation. In games that were blowouts and by no right, there should be these first team, standard first team players that were getting, you know, 75, 80 minutes. Split them up, play halves. You know, there's many things that you can do, and I think this is still something, and it's not just Jill Ellis, because this was happening a long time before that she came, where the reserve fringe players just weren't getting minutes, and it's wrong. It's wrong for a situation like this.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. I think, you know, we're focusing a lot on the free back. I think what also indicates this formation is not working, one goal in three games on home soil. That is not something we are used to seeing with the United States. Yes, they are playing against top nations in this competition, but that is not something we are used to seeing. And the fact that Lynn Williams was the only scorer in that whole tournament against Germany, that's got to be a concern for Jill Ellis when you think about the attacking talent that they've got in that squad. So,
look, mate, also, she looked disjointed. Every time she was on the field, she just looked lost out there. The one goal that she scored was really off of, you know, chaos in the box. And this will come in time where she needs to learn how to link up with her teammates better at this level. She did obviously brilliant with Western New York Flash, and, you know, hopefully we'll translate that with the North Carolina Courage. But there was a definite disconnect, and I think that's where the U.S. is still having issues finding the right personnel that's not named Alex Morgan and or Crystal Dunn to work well with the midfielders.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily single her out. It's like we said, it's the formation and the system, not necessarily the personnel. But look, they didn't win the competition. The French did. It's the first time we can say that about a France team winning a competition, and it's not very often we can say that. Obviously, it's only a friendly tournament, but it's a tournament nonetheless. Looking good, JJ. They are undefeated at the moment under coach Olivier Échouefny, and that includes games against the US, Germany, England, and Brazil. So, bodes well for them going into the next few months ahead of the Euros, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You and I were talking before the recording about how important it is to know how to win big matches in consecutive fashion. We'll talk about this more in the Algarve Cup, but in a tournament like this, if you can survive the three matches being unbeaten, then you've obviously done something right. I know you're going to have a little bit of a bone to pick about their result against England. They didn't really play a memorable match, to be fair, against Germany in the second, but also I think it should be fair to say that the temperature is of that match were, I don't know, 16, 17 degrees outside, wind chill in the single digits. That match should have never been played to begin with, even if it was a sunny day. But then the third match, on adverse conditions, bad field, they put in a performance of a lifetime against the United States and made them look silly. And everything was working that day. I enjoyed the outside backs, by the way, Kieran, in that one. Especially, I've never seen her much before, but Eve Parisei really jumped out to me. She had her way down the right side and made Casey Short look pretty bad on that day. Turned Allie Long a couple of times, beat the midfielders as well. But when they're operating well out wide, that allowed the space to open up for Lisa Mayer, and she did exactly what she does, get in behind defense or run at defenders and score.
Well, Eve is very highly rated, plays in the back line for Paris Saint-Germain. So I agree, she looked very good, and she's looked very good when I've seen her for PSG this season, certainly one for the future. And overall, I thought they were very, very good. They have options all over the field. We saw them get that last kick of the game victory over England, which was a heartbreaker for us over here. But you kind of, as soon as Wendy Renard came on, I made that mistake of tweeting out that it may seem weird, Wendy Renard coming on when France, I think they were behind at the time, or level, I can't remember, but I think they were behind. You know, getting that last minute win was certainly no surprise, because when you put Wendy Renard on, she'd scored two goals for Lyon from set pieces and headers the week before, and she did it again. And when you have someone like her, you've always got a threat. And I like what they've got, mate. You know, Schwaffney's brought in players like Guerrero, who played in midfield, I thought, in the second half against England. She and Amandine Henry absolutely dominated the midfield after Jordan Nobbs and Jade Moore had a brilliant, brilliant first half. But they look good. They look really good. And they look good against Germany as well. I mean, the Germany game, I think Germany could have easily won that one. They missed chances. I think it was Lena Magul, I think, smashed the bar from distance, if I remember rightly. You know, they had chances to beat France. But overall, if you're the French, you're pleased, because to go three games against those sides undefeated, you're going to be pleased.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's always getting that new air, having a new coach come in with new ideas. And you'll know a bit more about them, about France, than I will. Obviously, only get to see limited amount of action with them in the national team and hardly a sniff in terms of club play. But they look like a unit that was in major tournament, mid-tournament form and improving. And I think that's where they really were throughout. They had a bit of a slow start against England, made a couple of adjustments, as you said, carried on. Might have gotten fortunate with the result against Germany, but you want to be peaking at the back end of the tournament. And everybody saw that, what they did to the U.S.
Well, I think it's probably best I speak about England. But before I do, obviously we haven't spoken about Germany. They are operating under a new coach for the first time, in Steffi Jones, obviously took over from Sylvia Neid after the Olympics. What were your impressions of them in the games that you saw?
You know, again, for them, it's rough because it's the second year in this tournament where they're coming in with a very changed side. A lot of that due to injuries. I think, what, Kieran, out of the usual unit, four, maybe five major, you know, contributors not available, not coming to the camp. But with the team that they had, I think they did well. I think there's still some changes to be made, a little bit of adjustments. But Marozsán, after kind of a quiet Olympics, turned it on a bit throughout this tournament. Obviously, Anja Mittag hitting the half century in the final game, that's big. I think that it's one of those things with this team. You can't bet against the Germans in an international competition. And come July, they're going to be a team that's always going to be a favorite. And I think that, you know, they've put in a performance that they'll left happy enough, but there's always better. And I think that they will be better come the Euros.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And I totally agree on Jennifer Marozsán as well. I think she's thriving. Having that captaincy, having that armband on her, I think is obviously means she has that level of responsibility that means that they will be expecting big performances from her. And I thought she did very, very well in the She Believes Cup. And I agree. I thought Anja Mittag missed some chances as well as scoring that 50th goal as well, and that was a surprise to see some of the finishing from her. Lina Mugul, I think, is a player that we need to look out for. I think she's got a big future ahead of her. I think she's only going to get better. And they have, as you say, they had a lot of players missing. Simone Laudere was one. They're still waiting for players like Lena Lotzen to come back, who's just made her comeback for Bayern Munich after nearly 2 years out. You know, they had players missing, and they're still dealing with the retirements of players like Melanie Behringer and Saskia Bartusiak. So it's going to take them a little bit of time, but I'm sure with the friendlies that they've got coming up in the lead up to the Euros, they will certainly be contenders again. And I've got to finish with England, because yes, they finished third in the competition. Yes, they won only one game out of the three, but a much improved performance across the board from the She Believes Cup last year. Obviously, all of the games last year were very close for England. They were all very narrow in terms of the defeats and the draw that they got. But I was impressed with them this year. I think they made more of an attacking threat. Obviously, the win against the United States was huge. The publicity that it got over here in England was really big, because obviously the United States are the world champions. So for us over here, it's a big deal. But I think overall, it wasn't just the results. It was the performances that impressed me. And while the France game will have been a real sucker punch in terms of the last minute goal, I was impressed with England, and I'll take the biased hat off and give it to you, my friend, and allow you to wax lyrical over England.
Look, I think I'm with you. I think that they played well. There's, again, you don't want to be peaking at this time, especially with the major tournament on the horizon, but there were a lot of good things. I like that they were... Last year, they seemed passive in this tournament. You know, they didn't look comfortable at times. Maybe weather conditions could always be one thing, because you're going, obviously, from, you know, your climate, which is very freezing right now, to they're playing in South Florida. It's not exactly just a little bit of a change. That's a big change. Players that may have been getting into action on the international stage for the first time, but I thought they handled themselves well this year. I like that Siobhan Chamberlain getting a few more looks in net. Nothing against Karen Bardsley by any stretch of the imagination, but I think Siobhan is the future in net for this England team. I thought that Daly can get better. You know, created a couple of looks. I know that they were absolutely gutted as a team that they didn't get the results against France as well as Germany, because I think that they did enough to get results out of both. But I think that they're the better team against the U.S. Couple of bounces didn't go their way, but eventually got the one that they needed right at the death, which, to be fair, if there's one way to beat the U.S., it's pretty much on the last kick of the game, so that must have left a real good taste in their mouth. But I think that they're one, maybe two pieces away from having a really good chance of making another deep run in a major tournament.
Yeah, agreed. And we'll talk a little bit more about that shortly, because we want to talk about the FA's new women's football strategy that they launched this week at Wembley Stadium. But I mean, two key things for me from England, as I said, more competitive, showed more going forward, and again were defensively solid. I think Steph Horton is proving to be, I think she's developing into one of the best centre-backs in the world. I don't think she gets the credit that she deserves. She's a proper leader on the field, and a great individual to talk to, and very level-headed off of it as well. I think Lucy Bronze, I waxed lyrical over her during the competition. I think she has developed into the best right-back in the world. I think that there are players up there with her like Leonie Meyer, but I do think Lucy, in terms of all-round play, I think she is the best right-back in the world. And I think Jordan Nobbs in midfield was another one that stood out. I think she has the potential to really, you know, drive that England midfield forward for a number of years to come. I think she is developing into a world-class player, and it's not very often we've been able to say that about England in the past. You know, Kelly Smith was always the one that grabbed the attention, because she was the one naturally gifted world-class player that England had, and I think we now have a few that are developing into that. So it's exciting times for England, and I just hope that they can build on it and take that into the Euros, because it would be great for us to be able to build on what we've done over the last couple of years since the World Cup. But Yeah, I'll stop bragging about England and move on, mate, because there's a lot to get through and we've spent 20 minutes talking about She Believes. Algarve Cup and Cyprus Cup we'll cover briefly. It's very difficult for us because obviously neither are broadcasted in our respective countries. But we'll start with the Cyprus Cup, which was won by Switzerland. And I think the thing that stood out for us wasn't necessarily that Switzerland won it, because I think Switzerland are a classy side with some really classy players that we have seen in the World Cup in 2015. And I think they will continue to get better. And I think they will probably surprise a few people in Holland come July, August, when the Euros starts. But it was actually how some of the teams underperformed, wasn't it? And the one that really stood out for you was New Zealand.
Yeah, I think underperform may be a little bit of a generous statement here, and here's my reason. Some people in our women's soccer media community said that they're thrashing them a little bit. Not to take it unlightly, they were not nice about some of their performances. Look, at the end of the day, there's a couple of big things that are happening here. One, major changes going on within the team. Abby Ersig obviously retiring a little bit, maybe prematurely, from the national team and from international play. Two, they're not surprising anybody anymore. This isn't the Valai Cup in 2004 where, you know, they're still kind of figuring themselves out together and then they go on and beat Brazil in that tournament. We know exactly who's the threat on the New Zealand team. They're an able side. They're going to be able on their day to nick a result here and there against a top 15 opponent, but there's nothing that's like glitz anymore. And this isn't, again, a knock on the team and the personnel, but I think it's a lot of the reason with John Herdman leaving back after the 2011 World Cup. You know, they haven't really made any strides ever since then. And we haven't seen anything going forward. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think that they're ever going to be challenged where they are in their region, but I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing some more last place finishes in major competitions from this team.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? Because you talk about 2011, if you compare them to their near neighbours Australia, look at the comparisons of how they've both progressed. Australia now a top 10 nation in the world. Many see them as, I think, outsiders for the World Cup in 2019. I don't think that's a completely outrageous statement to maybe not win the tournament, but I would certainly see them pushing for at least the semi-finals. And we're looking at New Zealand and we're talking about a team that's finished bottom of their group in the Cyprus Cup. You mentioned Abby Ersig announcing her retirement, and we clearly, from the statement that she put out, suggests that it's not completely down to the playing side of things, and you have to be concerned, don't you? I mean, Hannah Wilkinson is obviously a young player that could potentially be the player that they look to, and Rosie White, but I'm with you, I don't see where the rest of the quality comes from. We know they have players like Ali Riley, but Ali Riley's been around for a little while now. She's not old by any means, but I don't see where the young players are coming from, mate. That's the problem.
And that was the development that Herdman brought, or at least set the table to come together, because obviously, you know, he left right before they kind of hit their peak. And now we get to this point, well, if there's limited resources, there's limited will and the ability to develop these what could be prospects, then yeah, they're just going to be lost right back into the shuffle where they show up to the major tournaments, great to see you, go 3-0, or maybe get a draw in there, which even then, you know, they got through the Olympics in 12 on one of the two third place finishes. 15, there weren't really anything spectacular in the World Cup to write home about. And then obviously same thing in the Olympics. There's not much left to be said about them, unfortunately.
No, agreed. It's a shame, real shame, because there is some talent in there, but I just don't see how they push on from what they've achieved in the past. And one other nation that I think will be concerned by their Cyprus Cup performance was Italy. One goal scored, 13 conceded in their three games. When you look at 4-1 defeat to Belgium, 3-0 defeat to Korea, Korea DPR that is, and 6-0 to Switzerland. I mean, absolutely thrashed, and that's a concern going into the Euros for them.
Absolutely. I mean, it's another one of those teams, and I'll be the first to say that I don't know much about the landscape in terms of the national team, but Italy, they've always been right there on the cusp of qualifying for major tournaments, and now obviously going into the Euros. And this is a group that would simulate a lot of what Italy would be seeing come that major tournament. And when you give up three to North Korea to begin with, that already kind of, and not to say anything about North Korea, but to say that, you know, if they're, you always want to start off a tournament well, and go losing 3-0 in your first match, that really kind of sets the tone. And they ended up actually scoring the opener against Belgium. And then they give up 10 straight goals after that in two consecutive matches. So that's not where they want to be right now. Again, admittedly, the rest of that group, the Swiss, North Korea, and Belgium, that's about as good of a group that you're going to get in that tournament. So they were challenged, but they were exposed at the same time.
Yeah. Well, redeem themselves in their playoff match at the end. They beat the Czech Republic 5-1, so they did finish at least on a high. We mentioned that Switzerland won it, and we have to congratulate them. Obviously, it's confidence for them going into the Euros and for the next few matches that they have in the build-up to the competition. I want to give a shout-out to the Republic of Ireland, mate. Now, granted, you'd have to say they were in the weaker of the groups. They had Wales, Hungary, and the Czech Republic. But they've obviously employed Colin Bell. We know him well. He's been on this show a number of times. Former FFC Frankfurt manager, won the UEFA Women's Champions League. He took over in the last couple of months, and they finished their group undefeated. They won two and drew one. And then they had their playoff game at the end against North Korea, and they lost 2-0. But I think for about probably between 70 and 80 minutes, they were at 0-0. And the North Korea are much more experienced, much kind of higher level than what we've seen from the Republic of Ireland over the years. So it looks like Colin Bell's made a pretty quick impact there.
When you have a manager who's only accustomed to winning in his past, that's going to carry over onto whatever team that you work with. You can be one of the worst sides in the world, and if you have a manager that comes in that's motivated, fresh off success, and you only want success, then that will then go off onto the players. And having success at one of these March international tournaments, that can carry on over for, not to say years to come, but that will give a lot of these players confidence. And this is a group, and you know well that this Ireland team, on their day, they can be very good, and they can break down teams, and they have the personnel to do it. And if they can string together now a good qualifying run for the World Cup after this, then that's only going to help them for not only the near future, but for the future down the road. And that will give Colin Bell a lot more certainty about working with this team, knowing that there's an upward trend going.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think exciting times for Ireland, and certainly interested to see how they progress. Gave Germany, if I remember rightly, in World Cup qualifying for 2015, a decent match when they played at home. I think it was a very late goal that kind of lost it for the Irish. But see how they go over the next few months. Now, Ireland are a team that I want to give a shout out to. I think the next team that we have to give a shout out to was the team that won the Algarve Cup, and that was Spain. I think it would be fair to say that the Algarve Cup is a much stronger competition than that in Cyprus. Not that there's anything wrong with the Cyprus Cup. There's plenty of decent teams in that. Scotland is another team. Wales is another that we didn't talk about and didn't mention. But I think Spain, it would be fair to say, upset the odds in this one, didn't they? Because when you have the likes of Sweden, Australia, China, Canada, experienced teams in the World Cup, for them to come out on top was impressive.
All 12 of these teams, Kieran, have either played in the last World Cup, the last Olympics, or will be playing in the upcoming Euros. So this is a tournament that, you know, despite not having the four that play in the She Believes Cup, this is about as good of a tournament that you can ask for, and you're 100% right. And this is going back to what I was saying about learning how to string together matches at a big tournament. Now, Spain, we saw them at the World Cup. We know that they have class. We know that they can pull out the results when they need to, but when you do it in consecutive fashion, that's going to help. Because remember, if you want to win the Euros, you have to get through six matches and you only have that cushion of maybe adding in a loss within the first three, so you have to win three straight matches in the knockout round. And pretty much all the teams that they played, those are teams you could face in a knockout round of any major tournament. You open up with a 2-1 victory over Japan, and to be fair, they dictated that match for three quarters of that contest, and then you go, you thrash Norway. I mean, this is a team that you and I are very high on. We think that Norway, depending on how the dominoes fall, they could be in the last four, if not the championship match in the European Championships. You get the result that you need against Iceland, and then you go, as you say, beat Canada, who I think maybe got a bit unfortunate that they didn't go home with a gold medal in Rio because of how, you know, they played Germany right to the end and they fell.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I think they had some problems, didn't they, at 2015. I think the players were quite open that they weren't getting on with the head coach. They brought in Jorge Vilda, who had done a really good job with the Spanish under-19s and the Spanish under-17s, and it seems like he's made a good impact. I think it's a statement, again, like the Cyprus Cup, like the She Believes Cup. It is a friendly competition, but it is a competition nonetheless, and you highlighted it brilliantly there. All of these teams have played in major tournaments or are on the cusp of playing in a major tournament. So for Spain to come out on top is huge, and I think Norway finishing 11th is a complete indicator of how strong this competition is, because Norway on their day, as you've rightly said, they can beat anyone, and I do genuinely mean they can beat anyone in the world. They have the players to beat the best teams in the world, without a doubt, and for them to finish 11th was a big surprise. I mean, you mentioned there Japan, winners of the World Cup in 2011, in a bit of transitional phase, lost some of their older players. That it's a shame, because what a wonderful team they were in their heyday. But it looks like there's a lot of younger players having to be thrown in now, because a lot of those players have now retired or are not being selected anymore. So I guess for them to finish sixth is, I guess to some would be seen as an underachievement, but I think we have to take it for what it is at the moment. It's going to take a little bit of time for them. I thought Holland, the host for Euro 2017, I think they put in a good tournament to finish fifth, and Australia obviously came in fourth. We wax lyrical about them so often because of the players that they have. But yeah, I think overall, fun tournament, wasn't it? I think it'd be interesting to see how this transitions, especially for the European teams, into the Euros.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, there were some interesting moments. Australia, they kind of left it a little bit late on some of their moments, but big shout out to Ellie Carpenter, by the way, the youngster, getting the game winner over China in their final group match to bring them into that third place competition. You know, there are teams that, you know, on their, like, I would have paid good money to go over and watch some of these matches, because these were really good, really well contested matches, and you never know, you might see. And we didn't even talk about Denmark, for an example. They lose their first match to Canada, hang around because Sink scored in the 90th minute, but then they thrash Portugal, they thrash Russia, and then they go on to their group stage and they beat Australia in penalties. So that's another good team in its own right. So we could talk about a lot of different things. Sweden finishing seventh. There's a lot of up and down moments, but that was a really good Algarve Cup.
Yeah, definitely a tournament that I want to get to. I've been to the Algarve, but I've never seen any football there. So it's definitely on my bucket list to go and watch. Well, I think we'll round up the tournaments there, mate. We've had a good discussion about all three, and we'll have a little break, and then when we come back, I'm going to have a chat about an event that I went to this week at Wembley Stadium.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So welcome back. JJ, I had the privilege of being joined by fellow media, stakeholders, partners, players, those associated with English football, at an event that was to launch the English Football Association's three-year strategy for women's football, looking ahead to the period between 2017 and 2020. Now, there were three kind of key aims that came out of that strategy, and it was to double participation in the women's game, to double the fan base, and for consistent performances on the world stage. Now, there were representation from, as I said, from a number of individuals and organizations. But the panel that were presenting in front of those individuals were the chief executive for the FA, Martin Glenn, the head of women's football, Baroness Sue Campbell, and the director for participation, Kelly Simmons. Now, these are three big hitters, and they were essentially outlining the plans and the ideas for what the FA have to try and essentially grow the game over the next few years. And it was interesting, mate. It was one of those events where you listened and you absorbed what they were saying, and then we had the opportunity to ask questions. And I guess I could go into the detail of what was discussed, and what I would advise is people go onto the FA website. I think you can download the three-year strategy. There was a key thing that came out of it for me, and I will, I've got the strategy in front of me, and if you bear with me, I'm just going to turn to one of the pages, and it outlines a bit more detail about those aims. And as I said, consistent success on the world stage. And next to it, it says, within the top three countries across all age groups and the potential to win the 2023 FIFA World Cup. Now, my question to you when you hear the potential to win the 2023 World Cup is, are you surprised that that strategy does not incorporate the potential to win the 2019 World Cup?
Yes and no. I'll start with the no first, because no, you don't want to rush things. This sounds like an event, and it's promising first off, and it's, you know, great to see that England is, you know, and you've been in the thick of it for a long time now. You know how far this nation has come and how far this nation still has to go to, you know, want to be in the top tier of women's soccer. And you don't want to rush things. That's why in past episodes I've said that, you know, Australia, this next World Cup could be their one, because they started this kind of renaissance, if you will, or bringing all these new young players at 16, 17, 18 years old. That was in 2011. So then you bring them to the next World Cup, similar success. You bring them to this coming World Cup, they're expected to do very well, if not win. So I think you don't want to over pressure some players to all of a sudden, well, you guys finished third, now go win. Well, to be fair, remember, they got a couple of bounces that went their way. Also, they got one bounce that didn't go their way in that tournament that could have very well led them on to going to the championship match. With that said, this is a team that could win. On their day, as we saw in the She Believes Cup, they can go up against the best teams of the world and beat them toe-to-toe. They did that to the U.S., Not many teams can go out and say, we have beaten the U.S. and beaten the U.S. on U.S. soil. England did that. So there's a chance. You can't count them out. Obviously, you have to make sure that you have players like Jordan Nobbs, like Steph Houghton, whoever's in goal that day, to be on form. You want somebody as a good supplemental striker. If, say, Duggan's not figuring it out, or if Daly doesn't have it, then does Jody Taylor go and have herself a tournament or something along those lines? There's a lot of different variables, but it's a team that can win it. But I understand why they're not putting the pressure on to say, well, now in 2 years' time, you have to go win the World Cup or this whole thing fails.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I did pose the question to Baroness Sue Campbell, as I said, the head of women's football at the FA, as to why we weren't necessarily looking at 2019. And fair play to her, she was very honest, and she gave a very good explanation in that she said, you know, we've looked at the players that we could potentially lose between now and 2019. And I'm guessing what she means by that is potential retirements. I guess you'd look at, and I'm not going to look to retire anyone, but maybe a Casey Stoney, for example, may decide not to go for the 2019 World Cup, and they've looked at the players that are coming through, and what she said is that we have identified that those players are very good, but they might not necessarily be at the level that we need to be winning a World Cup. And we've looked at the pathway that we have and what we will potentially have in 2023, and we think that we're going to be in a better position to win a World Cup then. But absolutely, Mark Sampson has to make the goal for his team to perform as well as they can. So I'm sure he will be saying, we are going to 2019 World in France to win the World Cup. He's not going to be saying, well, if the FA say we have to win it in 2023, we're not going to bother trying in 2019. I'm sure they will go there and do their best to try and win that gold medal. They were one game away from being in a gold medal match. Why can't they make that move and be there in 2019? The other thing that kind of I wanted to discuss, and as I said, I could go through this document. It's about 15, 16 pages. I won't go through the whole thing because I'd be here all day. But I think for our international listeners, one of the key things that I wanted to try and find out was one of the key aims is to double fan base. Now, that was clarified by both Baroness Campbell and by Kelly Simmons that did not mean attendances. So it wasn't a case of doubling attendances, it's doubling fan base. Now, I asked the question to Kelly Simmons, we've got these players coming over from the United States, your Carly Lloyds, your Crystal Dunn, your Heather O'Reilly's. We've then got players coming in from Europe, Ramona Bachmann, Maren Mjelde, all these players that are coming in. People want to watch them. People want to see the FAWSL. It is a league under the spotlight that is grabbing a lot of people's attention. And the biggest challenge is they can't see it. There are no official streams. There are no ways of watching the game. And people want to watch. So what are the FA doing to try and increase that fan base internationally? How are they increasing the fan base abroad? And I pose that question, and here's what Kelly Simmons had to say in response to that.
As you know, I cover a lot of the other leagues in the world, and the question that I keep getting asked from fans of other leagues is, how can I watch the FAWSL? You've got big players coming over, Carly Lloyd, Ramona Bachmann, Crystal Dunn, all these players coming from Europe and the United States, and one thing they're all saying is, I can't watch it, I can't get access to it. Is there an untapped market internationally that we can go to that's going to help generate funds? You know, they might buy a Carly Lloyd shirt, they might come to a WSL game if they're visiting the United Kingdom. How can we make the game more accessible for them? How are we talking about streams or any kind of broadcast that are available to supporters overseas?
It's a fair point. It's a good question. It's part of the scope of the new commercial strategy, is to look at the overseas rights, but also obviously to look at our broadcasting here as well. So the clubs are looking at streaming games this year, and BBC are going to stream some of the WSL games as part of the partnership with BT Sport. So we're kind of testing and piloting that during the year ahead. But overseas rights are part of the scope. I couldn't give you a sense of what that would be worth at the moment.
So that was Kelly Simmons. JJ, I know that you haven't had a chance to hear what Kelly said, but essentially, briefly, she said that they are putting together a commercial strategy and international rights is part of that, and that WSL clubs could potentially be looking to stream some games this year. That's got to be positive from an American perspective.
It is positive, and it's also something that, look, end of the day, it's doable. If you're looking to have something that's a very flashy product, I can understand that you want to make sure you take the right steps, find the right resources, put together something that's real quality. But if you want to have one camera stream, all you have to do is gather up some internet somewhere, whether it's on a MiFi card or something along those lines, pull up Wirecast, connect a camera, pay somebody to just move the camera back and forth, and boom, there you go. You have somebody streaming a match. So there is the, if you want to rush it versus if you want to do it right, I understand. But no, I'm happy that you asked that question, and I'm happy to an extent what the response was, because absolutely, look, there, and it's not just the American players that are coming over, but you know, for the American fans, they'll obviously want to see Heather O'Reilly compete for Arsenal. But this is a league that has the chance, if they're not already inside the top three leagues or so in the world, they have a chance to do that. And by one of those ways is drawing a large fan base. And you and I have had conversations before, and obviously the big difference that you were surprised to see is how available men's matches are here in the United States. You can watch every Premier League match here in America. That can't be said the same about other countries, including your own, for some extent. Why can't that be for the Women's League? And then, in vice contrast, why can't international audiences at least have like a game of the week, which is what the Bundesliga does for the women, have a showcase match that's very feasible. So these are interesting times right now, but I'm happy at least that the FA is taking the steps to try and make changes in that.
Yeah, without a doubt. And what I will say is that there are still some gaps for me. I think the FA are doing all they can. The word that they kept using was that this is an ambitious strategy. I think they are trying to achieve quite a lot in a short space of time. You tend to find that most strategies are around 5 years. They've made this one a 3-year strategy. As I said, they are looking to do a number of things, including increasing fan base, increasing participation, which will stem from trying to engage primary school students, primary school kids from the ages of 5 or 6, trying to grab them early. But I said to Baroness Sue Campbell as well, you can get the interest of these young girls as much as you like, but if the parents are not educated and if they're not encouraging their young daughters to play the game, then it could well be that they don't have a choice. You could gauge their interest. You could introduce them to a Jordan Nobbs or a Rachel Daly or a Casey Stoney or whoever it might be, and they could be incredibly inspired. They could go home and say, "Mum, Dad, I want to play football." But if those parents are not on board, if those role models are not on board with their daughter playing football, then you have a problem. And that is one thing the FA have got to try and tackle, and I don't know how they do it. I don't envy them. But educating parents and educating role models who have an influence on these young girls is going to be massive in terms of trying to increase that participation. But we'll have to see. But I commend them. I think it's a great strategy to try and improve the way the game is run in this country. They're certainly not resting on their laurels, and we'll have to see how that goes. But we are a matter of weeks away now, mate, from the FAWSL starting. I mean, we have FA Cup this coming weekend. Heather O'Reilly will be in action. Carly Lloyd will be making her debut for Manchester City Women against Reading. And, the teams are now starting to prepare. And I actually managed to go and watch Chelsea last week. They had a friendly in terms of preparation for the FA Cup game. They played against Swedish side Kristianstad. And Kristianstad had American midfielder Becky Edwards playing in their side. Now, before we came onto recording, you said to me, "Mate, I cannot believe that she came out of retirement."
I still cannot believe that she came out of retirement. I thought that, it was the kind of the so long thank you for everything that you've given to this sport here in America, because she's been a great ambassador. She, played in the WPS. She excelled here in the NWSL. Obviously had a couple of injuries that, in my opinion, due to that and a little bit of bad luck, she would have been a very consistent national team performer and probably should have been a consistent national team performer. But when you said the words, "I got an interview with her," and I was just like, "You did what now?"
I did. I got an interview with Becky after the game against Chelsea and asked her exactly why she came out of retirement. So here's Becky for a few minutes after her game for Kristianstad against Chelsea. You've obviously just come off the field. 1-0, yeah. Result didn't go your way, but it seemed like a good game to be involved in. Good test for you guys.
Yeah, definitely. I think coming from Sweden and playing one of the top teams in England is certainly a big test for us. And, I just got to Sweden a few days ago, so it's nice to jump in and play again and play with some old teammates and, that I've played with before. But most importantly, get some minutes under my belt and get back playing again.
5 years ago, I think it was, that you played in the Damos Svenskan, obviously had a stint in the NWSL. More recently, how's the transition been? You say you've only been back for a few days. How's it been embedding yourself back in?
I played on loan as well in 2014 here, so with this team. But it's quite easy. It's still the same centre-back pairing that I played with before, and that the coaches are the same, so I understand the expectations and the style of play that the Damallsvenskan is. And at times I think it suits my style a bit more, where I'm pretty technical and possession-oriented and tactical. So, it's nice to be back and with some familiar faces and playing again.
Obviously, the last time we saw you, I think you were being substituted for Maddie Evans against FC Kansas City back in September.
Yeah.
Announced your retirement a few days before. You decided to come back. What was the thinking behind that one?
Well, Christian's dad had reached out to me after the last season, and they always said, you know, if you want to come back and play, there's always a spot for you here. And, you know, I thought, I've always enjoyed my time in Sweden. I love the culture in Sweden, and for me it felt like, you know, it wasn't quite ready yet. So, you know, when I had, when I reached out and had the opportunity, I was like, all right, let's do this, and jumped right in, and I'm happy to be here with this team.
What's the aim? Kristianstad struggled a little bit last year. You've got a Swedish Cup next week, and then the season kicks off in a month. What's the aim for you, and what's the aim for the team this year?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, again, for me, it's just I got here a few days ago, so I'm still getting used to the new teammates and some teammates I know and the style of play and expectations for this year. But I think certainly our goal is to win the Swedish Cup, and that's except the quarterfinals are next weekend, and we're looking forward to that. And then as the Damallsvenskan League approaches, you know, take it game by game, but certainly hope to improve upon last year and, you know, at least get middle of the table or better. So.
What is it about Sweden that's the appeal for American players? Obviously, you're playing here. We've seen high-profile players as well, Kristen Press, Megan Klingenberg. What is it about the Swedish league that attracts American players?
I think it's certainly a high level. You know, you saw Sweden in, what, the Olympics last year, and they did quite well. And, you know, it's different than the American league. And in my opinion, I think the American league is a bit more athletic. And here, you know, the levels are both very high, but in different ways. And here it's, in my opinion, a bit more tactical and technical. And, you know, I appreciate that style of play. So, you know, as I appreciate the American style of play, but for me, sometimes I'd like to come back and see that, and you know, I think it suits my game a bit more.
I know the players have spoken quite about the lifestyle in Sweden as well, is always a big attraction.
Yeah, I enjoy the culture there. It's you know, I don't know how to really describe it. That's a good question, but you know, I ride my bike everywhere and go to coffee shops and hang out with my teammates, and you know, it's different than American culture, where it's just nice to experience something different personally as well.
Last question. You said Kristianstad obviously reached out to you, and I'm sure it's a big thing to announce your retirement and then kind of change your mind. What sort of things did you have to think about before deciding to come back?
Well, I think for me it was, I always, when I was younger, I said, okay, I maybe retire in Sweden. I always enjoy the culture and the style of play, but I wanted to go back to the U.S. at times, and, you know, had goals of making the national team. But for me now in life, it's nice to come back and, you know, see some friends and coaches and familiar faces that I used to play with, and kind of get the joy back again in the game that I once had. So, you know, for me, it was, you know, that opportunity came about, and I said, I just jumped right in and said, I'm gonna get out of here and do it.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So that was Becky Edwards. JJ, enjoying life in Sweden by the sounds of it. Certainly one who's been sold the Swedish culture. She obviously had two stints out there beforehand with Kristianstad, and it sounds like it was that lifestyle and that culture that drew her back into the country. So wish her well. Think she'll be missed in the NWSL. I really believe that. I think she's a quality midfielder. I think she should have had international honours with the US, and I don't know why she was overlooked for as long as she was, but we know there's a lot of competition in that team. But great to catch up with Becky, and so thank you very much to her for her time. And I think, mate, it is the time to wrap up this show. So thank you very much, as always, for your time, pal.
Absolutely, and looking forward to getting the seasons underway finally. The FAWSL, the NWSL, and I know there's going to be a lot of good content coming up both here on the pod and as well on the website.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you mentioned the leagues there. The Damallsvenskan's due to start. We've got the French and the Germans leagues heading into the business end. The Top Serien will start soon as well. We've got UEFA Women's Champions League quarterfinals coming up. It's going to be really, really hectic. And of course, we will do our best to cover as much as we can. As JJ said, the podcast will continue to be busy. Sorry, this is the first one we've had in a few weeks. Busy times mean it has been delayed by a week. But we will have our usual FAWSL and NWSL previews coming up within the next month. We'll, of course, as JJ said, keep uploading content to our new website. Thank you so much to those who have visited. Of course, you can find that on womenssoccerzone.com. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do. We're on @WosoZone. Email us at wosozone@gmail.com. And the podcast is available on womenssoccerzone.com and is also available on iTunes. So until the next time, guys, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.